hello, welcome to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and since our White House credentials have been repealed, Adam, we decided to come here and do this show instead, because, you know, we'll never ever get past the Iron Gates there. Not gonna happen, so we'd much rather be doing this, probably, right?
I want my credentials back. No, it's, yeah.
No comment.
No, yeah.
I said no comment.
Sit down.
Sit down.
You're being very disrespectful.
Give me that microphone.
Your question about my racism is so racist.
Anyway. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. And you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today, we will head out to Calgary, where the city will vote next week on whether or not they'll welcome the Winter Olympics in 2026. So far, it looks like only some members of City Council are into it, but is there still a chance it will happen? And then we will welcome the first new member of City Council we have had on the show. Dominique O'Rourke, the new councillor-elect for Ward 6, will join us to talk about her victory and her agenda as we count down to the new council. You can watch the countdown clock in the bottom of your screen there. But speaking of, you know, the U.S. networks that do crazy things, the U.S. midterms was this past Tuesday. So how American elections work is they have major national elections every 2 years, every 4 years. Yes, it's the presidential election, but also the election of members of the House of Representatives and one third of the Senate every 6 years. And then what we just came through what they call the midterm elections, like halfway through the presidential term. And that is the House of Representatives and again, one sixth of the Senate. And the big headline out of it is that the Democrats retook the House of Representatives. It's still up in the air because there's still a lot of votes being tabulated, a lot of close races, but it could be as many as 35 seats, 35 seat swing. It'd probably be closer to 30. But pretty decisive victory, especially since the map was not kind to Democrats. Or anything was kind to Democrats, really.
Yeah, I still find I have a problem with the red and blue because traditionally those colors are kind of reversed up here.
Most places.
So, but of course, in America, they do things a little bit differently. Excuse me. So they have...
They took the U's out of their words.
Yeah. It's like, I can't understand anything because there's no U. But yeah, and it's... the predictions on this were fairly accurate, I think, in terms mm-hmm. of which way the Senate was going to go, which went Republican. And the House of Representatives, as you said, going to the Democrats. What I always find really interesting in the U.S. and try to follow beyond the so many races were close, the 51-49s and recounts galore, is ballot initiatives, which is something we really don't have up here. We do have things on occasion, actually, as we'll talk about.
as coming up.
The plebiscite.
We don't do ballot initiatives here.
Yes, we do, but they're not as intense, I guess, as they are.
It's not a regular
in
thing.
In the U.S.
Yeah.
Some of the things... Measures quickly that were up for grabs were the recreational marijuana in Michigan, which I think passed.
Yes. Oh, well, actually, all legal, all weed is legal in Michigan now.
Passing by 71% in Alabama was the displaying of the Ten Commandments publicly. Ugh. And fetal rights. So there you go. That's Alabama for you. And interestingly, in Florida, an initiative passed for restoring voting rights to felons. So people that had been, with some exceptions.
Ex-felons. Like people who finished their sentence.
You finished your sentence. The rule used to be you finished your sentence, you couldn't vote. Now you can with some if you were a murderer.
Yeah, 1.4 million people got their voting rights restored in Florida, which is pretty amazing and probably would have helped out Andrew Gillum a lot.
Probably changed some of those 51-49 races.
But, I mean, it'll help the next Andrew Gillum. And the other interesting one was in Louisiana, where they voted to undo a law that said that juries can convict you for a felony with 9 out of 12 majority. It wasn't you had to.
So it's like a super majority, but not unanimous.
Right. Most places you had the jury has to vote unanimously to convict.
Yeah.
But in Louisiana, for a felony, and these are things like, you know, murder, like the most serious of crimes,
high crime. Yeah.
You it was, you know, if only 9 out of 12 people voted to convict, you were convicted. There's no hung jury in this situation like there would be in other places. And of course, this was a Jim Crow era law, one of the last sort of vestiges of Jim Crow to finally be overturned because, of course, if you were someone who was colored black and up for murder and you were to get an all-white jury, you might get a few sympathetic liberal-minded white jurors, but, you know, to make sure that you went to the noose or the electric chair or whatever, the 9-12 majority instead of a unanimous verdict certainly allowed that along. So that, I mean, I think one of the bigger stories, underreported stories, is just these sort of indications of racial injustice or these overturning these racial injustices and, and vindicating more freedom for in the criminal justice system.
So, and of course, speaking of overturn, Trump, who is, well, we were sort of hinting at the press conference off the top there, which is one of the most interesting of his tenure so far.
Well, it's his third.
His third.
It's his third, like, standalone press conference.
Yeah. And possibly the last at that rate. calling the election a tremendous success.
Right.
Maybe for the Senate, but of course,
What he meant.
I don't think he realizes in losing the House, there's a lot, I'm not sure if people fully appreciate what can happen now that the House is Democrat. Mm-hmm. The House of Representatives has the power to stop any Trump legislation.
All Trump legislation, for that
matter.
If
they want, they're be able to crank up the investigation.
Subpoena powers.
Yes. So there's been some hinting about wanting to get rid of Mueller maybe next now that Sessions is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want people to stop talking about the election, drop that nuke into the middle of everything.
Well, I mean, this is Trump's gift, is that a lot of people yesterday morning were talking about what the implications were for Democrats in the House victory. And that was quickly swept off the page after the press conference. And then the press conference was swept off the page when he fired Sessions. And then Sessions was swept off the page when Jim Acosta's press credentials were revoked. And then, of course, there was a mass shooting last night in California at a club. 12 people killed. And that swept everything else. I mean, the microcosm of the modern news cycle, in 24 hours, you go through 5 huge stories.
And I think Tony Clement was probably hoping...
Oh, my goodness. I couldn't believe that when that broke Tuesday night.
Yeah, that he would be sort of buried in the mix, but he wasn't.
Yeah, well, sadly, he lives in Canada, which is a whole different country.
Mm-hmm. No, but as we were talking a bit about it before the show, how unprecedented the Canadian coverage of this was.
Yeah.
CBC went all in. Now, I discovered on our Apple TV that we have 2 American stations now that had news feeds. One was good. One wasn't so good. But interestingly, when the polls closed, it was really weird. They were declaring winners with 0% of the vote, which I thought was really odd.
Right.
I mean, they're just going to, you know, they're making a heavy assumption of the person that's going to win.
Educated guesses.
And of course, I didn't go back and double check. But it's like, you can't declare somebody a winner with no polls reporting. You just can't. You can't even do it with one. But they did. I will not name names, however.
Well, I mean, it's part of the whole silliness.
Yeah.
The sportsman, you know.
Everything's breaking.
When you're watching CNN on election night, you're basically watching SportsCenter, except about politics. And
model is the same.
That's really all it is. And it was funny to me watching CNN last night because Chris Cuomo had on the Mooch. They were talking about the election results, and Mooch was going on about Florida. And the thing about Florida is, I think Andrew Gillum has conceded, although there might be a possibility of a recount there.
Mm-hmm.
But the Senate race there will definitely be a recount because it's that close between Rick Scott and Bill Nelson. And the Mooch is talking about it's going to be great for Trump in 20. At first, I don't know how you get S-canned by Donald Trump and still go to bat for him on TV all the time, but I guess that's the
Mooch. I love him so much.
But he's talking about how great it is for Trump in 2020. It's like, yeah, in Florida it is, but look northward. Pennsylvania, big blue wins. Wisconsin, big blue wins. Mm-hmm. Michigan, big blue wins. Ohio, blue wins. those are the states he needs to win. Those were the states that turned the election for him. Those are the states he needs to win again in 2020 if he wants to stay in the White House, at least lawfully. But so, I mean, it's kind of bad news for Trump all around, which was why you sort of saw him lash out. And my favorite part of the press conference was when he was like, you know, some people supported me and, you know, they won, and other people supported me and they lost, and that's okay. And then he whips out this list of all the people who didn't bend the knee for him.
Yeah.
And reads it off. It's like,
serves you right. Yeah.
This person didn't support me and they lost. And it's just like, really? Really?
That's how he rolls, right?
You're a 72-year-old man who has to have his hand held all the time. It's astounding. But I want to talk about some of the victories.
Yes.
And I don't mean like just the numbers. The first two Muslim women to be elected to the House, Rashid Tlaib and Ilhan Omar.
Having a Quran in the House of Representatives is going to make a lot of people nervous.
Oh, jeez. And Omar is also the first Somali-American woman in Congress. She was a refugee, and now she is in the House. Speaking of making people nervous...
she took someone's job. No.
Shanice Davids of the Kansas 1st District. She is indigenous. She's LGBT. And she's a former MMA fighter. So
she's somebody you want on side. Honey.
She's somebody you want on your side.
Oh yeah.
She's the first indigenous woman in Congress, and so is Deb Hyland, who is replacing the now governor elect of New Mexico, Michelle Lohan Graham. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez now is the youngest woman to be elected to Congress. She's 29. Lou Leon Guerrero, the first female governor in Guam.
Go Guam. North Korea is coming from
Anya Presley is the first black woman to represent Massachusetts in the House. You have Sylvia Garcia and Veronica Escobar, who are the first Latinas to represent the House for Texas, or to represent Texas for the House, I should say. Jared Polis is the first openly gay man elected to be a governor of a U.S. state, and that state is Colorado. And, you know, even in the losses, there's a lot to, you know, sort of get excited. You know, a lot of people focus on the fact Beto O'Rourke lost by, I think it was like 2.5% to Ted Cruz.
Considering it's Texas.
Yeah, like, so, you know, massive. cab drivers and teen couples are safe in the Bay Area for another 4 years. Zodiac killer humor.
Yeah.
Still on the loose. So 11 House seats flipped blue in Texas, and that was mostly riding Beto O'Rourke's coattails. And he took a lot of crap in the last couple of weeks because he was raising so much fundraising because people found him appealing, obviously. Mm-hmm. But a lot of Democrats were like, you know, you're not going to win. I don't understand why you're taking all this money. And it's like, well, this is why. 11 mm-hmm. seats in Texas are now blue.
Yeah.
Because of Beto. So he didn't win the Senate seat, but, you know, he, you know, tied races
all
boats.
Close.
Yeah. Oh, you came close. Like
and I happened to see his speech, too, his thank you speech, where he dropped a just completely on live feed, blew an F-bomb across. So.
But it's...
Once a punk, always a punk, right? So, a bass player, right?
He was.
I looked him up.
No, but it's, you know... Even though it's Ted Cruz, to come within 2.5% of beating him is extraordinary. And I think the same can be said for like Stacey Abrams in Georgia, although that also looks like it might go for a runoff.
Yeah.
Even though Brian Kemp seemed to throw every dirty trick in the book to suppress the vote, like sending voting machines, but no power cords. Come on. It's... It's
What was the other one? Was the humidity was a problem?
Yeah.
And it's like, how is humidity a problem?
It's Georgia.
I guess it can be. It's Georgia, yeah, I suppose. You forgot one first, though.
Yeah.
The first dead brothel owner.
Oh, jeez.
In Nevada, won his legislative seat. He's the author. Yeah. Get this. He's the author of The Art of the Pimp.
Good for him.
Yeah, as opposed to The Art of the Deal. So I wonder which is,
which could also be construed as Art of the Pimp.
Heidi Fleiss was his partner. So I think there's a whole nother story there, but I don't know who's going to take the seat, how that works.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he isn't the first. He cannot be the first in American history to run deceased.
Oh, no.
He could be the first one to win, but that just shows you Nevada will just say, okay, whatever.
Well,
we want this guy.
The only other one that comes to mind is the West Wing, but that's
fictional. Oh, yeah. Well, there's, that's...
Yeah.
That's all based on
reality. Will Bailey's House candidate in California and... wins, even though he's dead. And then Sam Seaborn runs and doesn't. Anyway, that's all the election news from Real Life and the West Wing.
Yes.
but it's, I mean, it's a very positive, I think, step. I think Seth Meyers actually said it best. He said, you know, when you've been in the desert for 2 years, a splash of water feels like a tsunami. And I think
that's
how people are feeling, especially now that, you know, it seems to, I mean, and I've heard a number of people say this, but, you know, imagine what Donald Trump's done a lot of stuff in the last couple of days, or last day, actually.
last few minutes, we don't know
about it. Last 24 hours. Yeah. But imagine what he would be doing if the Republicans had won. You know, imagine the free reign he would have now.
Oh. You'd never hear that. I mean, we're never hearing the end of it anyway, but we'd never, it was just like,
Yeah. So it's just, you know, think about all that, and, you know, if nothing else, we're going to get some answers to, I think, some, we're going to at least see some responsibility on behalf of Congress again. And, you know, whether that is like getting the tax returns, although Trump says it's so complicated, no one will understand them anyway. I don't think he understands them, so nobody does. But, you know, things like, it's not just the subpoena power, but, you know, there have been times when you've had, like, witnesses like Jeff Sessions who have testified and have refused to answer questions. And you can find them in contempt of Congress if the chair is so willing.
Yeah.
So far the chairs have not been willing. So, I mean, that's the other side of this. Not only the ability to seek out answers, but to make the people responsible for actually giving answers to.
So we're in for an interesting
couple
of years.
Yes.
Or less. We'll see.
Like it's just beginning.
Yes.
It's just beginning. Anyway.
I want to cue up some ominous music.
Dun, 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 dun. Anyway.
Next on Open Sources.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're moving on to Calgary, where they are trying to secure the 2026 Winter Olympics. It seems like it's going to be an uphill climb, though, even though they're like bringing out everybody. Eddie the Eagle was out,
the Eagle,
you know, advocating for this the other day. What's interesting here is that it's a plebiscite, so Calgarians are going to the polls on the 13th, although advanced polling is now open. They are going to cast their ballots whether or not they want to see the Olympics come to Calgary again. The city council had a vote, I think, last week to decide if they still support the bid, that was a failure. 8 people voted no, let's not support the bid. 7 people, including Mayor Nahidnenshi, voted yes. But it was you needed a supermajority of 10 to stop the bid.
Mm-hmm.
So that failed. So now it's going to the people. And it'll be interesting to see what the people think, because I pulled this CBC poll that was published yesterday. 35% of Calgarians eligible to vote said they would vote in favor. 55% are opposed. Oh. And 10% are undecided.
Yeah, and bizarrely, you mentioned the city council. The city's chair of the Olympic bid, Evan Woolley,
mm-hmm.
wants the bid killed.
Yeah.
But he plans to stay on as the chair, which is really odd place to be. I think he was in the... Did you see or hear anything of this debate that they had?
No.
There was like a 6-chair or 7-chair debate on both sides, on all sides, I guess. But it sounds like the advanced voting in the plebiscite was busy today.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
So who knows how it's going to go? I think obviously people have strong feelings because mostly I think because of the money. Now, this is supposed to be a budget conscious bid.
Mm-hmm.
In that,
well, they all are.
Yeah, I guess some of that is being driven by the IOC. It's like, well, you know, let's not get up to all the stuff that causes the cost overruns.
Mm-hmm.
But they never meet the costs. What was one report saying that since 68 or something, they've always gone over,
mm-hmm.
and now they're always double.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, something that was cut right away, I don't know if it was to make the bid more appealing, was the amount of housing that was going to be built, which is always something that's touted at these things for being of a net benefit to the community.
Right.
Along with, I don't think the infrastructure things that would normally happen, like trains and roads, are going to happen as well. Although inevitably, if you're building stuff, especially, I think they said they were going to build a new Fieldhouse, the desire for a fieldhouse of a sort of a multi-event place, would definitely need infrastructure. And it's,
right.
Who's going to pay? We don't know.
And keep in mind that the Calgary Flames have been sniffing around for a new stadium, too, or a new arena.
Wasn't there a threat that they were going to leave?
It was yeah.
Like, well, we'll go. You know, if you can't sort it out, we'll leave.
Right. But I mean, but it's the same, I want to say, hustle as in a lot of places,
oh, yeah.
a lot of like professional sports teams yeah. looking for new stadiums or new arenas or what have you, where it's going to be put on the municipality, who really reaps no benefit monetarily, except for like the ancillary benefit of having a professional sports team in town. Meanwhile, the highly successful and profitable major league sports team basically gets a new place to play for free, or near free. So, I mean, that's part of it too. I think in the case of Woolley, though, just from what the comments I've read, it's not that he doesn't believe in the games; it's that he's less than impressed with the support from the other levels of government, and that includes like the feds, who have said like, okay, you're going to have $495 million for, or $495 billion, I should say, or maybe it's just a million, $495 million for security, but.
Yes.
No, we're not going to do any cost overruns. We're not covering those cost overruns, which there inevitably will be. So that leaves Calgary in a lurch. Plus, the feds were late sort of coming in with their bid. Rachel Notley seems less than enthused about endorsing paying for the Olympics. So, it's not a matter of Woolley not wanting to have Olympics in Calgary. And I think that probably the same of those seven other people who voted for his motion. I think it's just, you know, nobody wants to front the cash. Nobody wants to be the one who says, I want to front the cash to fund it.
Yeah, and Nenshi, who was calling it, who is for it, he's for the bid, mm-hmm. was calling it where we're getting a mixed messages
yeah.
on the security money and the other money. It's like, well, if they're saying they're not going to fund it, they're not going to fund it. That's not really mixed. That's like, we're not going to go over. Now, in true Canadian style, you would think that Canada are the only ones in the running for this. There's actually other places, including Stockholm and Milan, Cortina d'Ampezzo in Italy. There was a lot of other bids withdrawn, including Quebec City. So it starts off with this long list, and then it gets knocked down to the
right
to the remainder.
And what's
and there's
curious?
Been some sort of delay too, though, right? Like
yeah.
it's usually announced by now, or do they announce it the next Winter Olympics, right?
No, it's announced before. It's, I mean, they'll definitely say at the end of 2022. Now we're on to so-and-so in 2026, but I think it's usually about 6 years out, so we're kind of on schedule. It's 'cause it'll probably be about 2019, 2020 it'll be announced. But I mean, this is the curious thing, is that when it came down to it in 2022, it was like China, someplace in like Russia, I think, and like Kazakhstan. Like there was like
yeah.
kind of no enthusiasm. And I thought this was I thought this might have been the start of a trend. Like a lot of cities around the world were like saying, you know, this is like so costly. It's such a pain in the A with, you know, the security costs and the disruption to normal functioning in the city. It, you know, the benefits do not outweigh the liabilities and the costs. So it's a bit surprising that there are so many places that are sort of still in the running.
Yeah, the official line is that, well, it's a 10-to-1 return on investment, but I challenge anybody, do this for me. Google abandoned Olympic venues, and you'll
yeah.
see how, and some of them that are abandoned, I'm thinking Athens.
Yeah.
Not that long ago. It's like
04.
04. So there you go. It's within this century.
Even Skochi, which was 4 years ago.
Yeah. It's in ruin.
Like, looks like Priet.
Yeah.
Which is that town outside Chernobyl.
I was going to say Planet of the Apes, but yeah, you're right. It's kind of expecting them to come
but,
over there.
You
hill.
Know, going but coming back to Canada, though, the Vancouver Olympics, I looked up the numbers. It was promised that one-third of Olympic Village was going to go to social housing, one-third for sort of middle-income housing, and then one-third for like fair market value. Instead, it was whittled down to 20% that was going to go to affordable. So that was 252 units in the end. And then ultimately, all said and done, 126 units out of over 1,300 were affordable. 126, so about 10%. So it went from 33% down to 10.
It went down
squat.
To nothing, yeah.
And then there were four like sort of key promises made. by the Vancouver Olympic Commission, including creating an affordable housing legacy, didn't, protect rental housing, didn't, make sure homelessness doesn't increase, actually homelessness doubled, more than doubled, and to make sure the poor people of Vancouver weren't displaced. They were. So it was, you know, four times the failure, and people wonder why. There was, like, people here in Guelph protesting when, you know, when the torch went through. Remember, that was a controversy.
Yes.
That you know, it's, they make these promises, and promises broken. And this was before the bubble, too. It's the bubbles, you know, the housing bubble in Vancouver has kind of only made it worse. There's nothing affordable in Vancouver anymore.
No, I'm not sure. I think the prices in Calgary are comparable. It's, I mean, Vancouver is obviously off the charts, and Toronto too. But I think things can be pretty tight and tough in Calgary because, well, being an oil-based economy, right? It's seesaws like anything.
Well, this is it. Who knows what might happen in 8 years? Oil prices might skyrocket again. Everybody moves back to Vancouver. All the prices in Calgary. All the prices in Calgary end up going back up again.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows what happens?
Yeah, it's so, but
not Nadine Nenshi, not Rachel Notley, not Justin Trudeau, not Jason Kenney. Who knows what might happen? Anyway,
and that's the unknown. But we'll see where the plebiscite goes. It sounds like it's going to go in the no, but if it's not binding. It's not binding.
No, it's not binding.
An official thing. So they're just feeling.
But
it
I
out.
Mean, it's going to be an uphill battle if like the count if council. By a slim majority says no, and the city says no, and then everybody starts, all right, we're going to have the Olympics here. That's a tough road to hoe. I mean, if it's like even like a marginal like 51-49 or something, even that's a tough sell.
A Florida-style margin. Right?
A Florida-style margin. Even that's a tough sell. You know, this has to be a blowout for like – and it doesn't sound like it's going to be a blowout. You know, for to undergo all the stress and the construction and the security. You know,
yeah,
for 8 years of work to get this done.
Yeah, because here's a
and
question.
It's not even a sure thing yet.
Here's a question I'll ask you.
Yeah.
So last Olympics, last Winter Olympics, who won the gold in bobsled? Yeah, see, that's it. I don't know either, right? So, and I didn't even bother Googling it because it's like, this is the kind of thing. This to me... In my opinion,
it wasn't Jamaica.
Well, no. Oh, but I rooted for them, though. That's peak everything, right? When Eddie Eagle was around, too, I was like, this is the greatest thing. He got in on a technicality.
Yeah.
He sort of, mocking the whole thing, but kind of flying in the face of the whole, I'm an athlete and da-da-da-da.
Yeah, well, it's true.
And
amateur
yet, look,
sport.
He's out on the bid. Like he...
Right. And that was the thing about the Calgary Olympics with like the Canada coats with the white tassels and the cowboy hats.
So, who was that bad singer on American Idol? He parlayed that in.
William Hung.
There you go. See, you knew that answer.
I did know that answer.
Bobsled? I got no
idea.
But,
you know, with the Jamaican bobsled teams, the first appearance, Eddie the Eagle... Both of which have been turned into movies, by the way. You know, the underdog quality of that Olympics. But, I mean, you can't really capture that anymore because now it's all about the spectacle and the commercialism. And
I really want the underdog Olympics, like that to be a thing.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of gets to the root of amateur sport. Before we go to break, we just wanted to tell everyone or remind you, if you already knew, starting on Monday... CFRU will be doing its Raise Your Voice funding drive. We haven't done one of these in a couple of years, but it is backed by popular demand. The station's looking to raise $5,000 to ensure that the Mobile Community Studio will be able to carry on and provide a space for marginalized groups around Guelph to tell their stories and to be able to access radio and media production. So it's kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
There will be more details on the CFRU site over the weekend as we officially launch the campaign on Monday, and it will go through till Saturday, November 24th, so there'll be special programming and prizes and things. Let's see what we have here. I don't know if I can share this yet. But
give us a teaser. What's one of them?
We'll give a teaser. If you like certain musical festivals around Guelph, you may like one of these prizes. If you like...
Rhymes with Thrill Side? Is that the one, maybe? Can't say.
Yeah, maybe rhymes with Thrill Side.
Can't say.
Maybe rhymes with Brazoo. lots of different
Wazoo, yes.
Tickets. Oh, I should have went with Wazoo.
Yeah.
Tickets for various musical performances coming up. Memberships in various local groups. So there will be lots of great prizes. Stay tuned to the CFRU website at cfru.ca/donate to learn more. And... there'll be lots of great stuff going on in the next couple of weeks. For Raise Your Voice, there'll be lots of great stuff coming up next, because we have Ward 6 Councilor-elect Dominique O'Rourke coming in, and we're going to talk about the next term of council. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
New album, that was Helena Hoff. The album is called Quam, and that song was called It Was All Fields Around Here When I Was a Kid. See, he's laughing because I did choose that song for a reason, because I think when all of us got here, it was all fields around.
Well, it certainly was.
In some ways, especially Ward 6.
Yeah. Good segue. Nicely done.
We try.
So that voice you're hearing belongs to Dominique O'Rourke, who is the Ward 6 City Councilor-elect. I'm not sure if that's the official title.
That is the official
title. Is that the official title?
Yep.
All right. Because, you know, we have different whatever. Anyway, so welcome to the show. Welcome to your first of what will likely be many appearances here as a city councilor.
Cool.
I love how sanguine you are about it. All right, I'll just come back whenever. Okay, let's start with election night, because I think, not to disparage your victory, but, you know, it was a pretty big margin of victory for you that, you know, like, you handily secured your seat with, you know, it was almost like mayor numbers, like, in terms of just, you know, and I'm not belittling that, it just, you know, with... it was like 40% of the vote, right? It was almost 40.
So at one point it was 39. That night it ended up around 36, and I think with the advance polls we're back around 31%. But but it is very humbling to think that on that day 4,000 people left their homes, workplaces, or whatever, and went to vote and put an X next to my name. That is that's a huge responsibility.
Yeah. What do you think made the difference for you? Like, what do you think, like, you know, I'm sure you've thought about it, you know, how it's certainly in terms of maybe in 4 years trying to replicate that success. But, you know, what do you think made the difference in terms of how you campaigned, or you know, was it just, you know, genuine shoe leather?
So it's really hard to say, because all the candidates worked very hard.
Mm-hmm.
All the candidates had the same intent to do something great for the ward, to connect with people, to serve the city. I've been in Guelph since 1997. I have very wide networks, and I have very good experience that's going to relate to work on council. And I think I was listening to people at the door. I was staying connected with those people. And I had a great team of volunteers, you know, so I had a lot of people come alongside me and help. I think those things together, I think I connected with people, and clearly they came through for me on election day. But, you know, we would often, candidates would cross each other, you know, at intersections, and you're canvassing one street and I'm canvassing the next. You kind of wave at each other. Everyone worked really, really hard.
Yeah. It's I'm remembering now, you're one of the first people in the race. You were like day and date, one of the first people up to bat.
So actually, Stacey Cooper was the appointment right after me.
Oh, yeah?
Right? So it was May 1st. And the thing that maybe people don't know is that you cannot raise funds or spend any money until you declare as a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you need a lot of runway to raise money to then buy your signs or secure a domain name, you can't do any of that until you register. So I wanted to register as early as possible so that you could, you know... And then the moment you hand the clerk your files and, you know, your signatures and your check, you automatically think, I'm late. I don't have a website. I don't have brochures. I don't have all this stuff, right? So so I wanted to get started early.
And Stephen O'Brien talks to you in his, you know, very direct, very monotone voice, and it makes you feel like you're back at school, and that makes you even more nervous.
Oh, well, you know, the it's not for the faint of heart.
No disrespect even, to Stephen O'Brien.
No, and so it's his job to lay
it's
out
his job,
literally
and he does
the
it well.
Law.
Yeah.
And here's what happens if you don't keep track of your finances, and right? And it's very discouraging for people unless, you know, if you're easily discouraged, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we're now in the post-campaign period, obviously. So what have you been up to in terms of getting yourself ready? I mean, I imagine there's also training coming up for you and Rodrigo especially, but I know the all of council will be sort of getting reoriented too. But in terms of your own preparation, what have you been doing?
So I would say the first piece was wrapping up the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really looking forward to a sleep-in the morning after the election. And my husband rented a trailer and we were going to pick up the signs because, like, so my signs, I just did the plain lawn signs. They're $6 each, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so if I run again, I want to be able to reuse those. And my husband was very concerned. People were just going to throw them in the recycling. And so we were out at, you know, 8 in the morning, starting to pick up signs. He walked the dog and picked up all the ones that were on our street. And so immediately it was that. You still need to thank the volunteers. You still need to write 1,000 thank you notes, mm-hmm. Respond to a lot of emails in the first day after that. So it's a lot of that. And now we need to, you know, tidy up the financials and submit those things and then put that to bed. And then to start to take down the campaign website and find your new contact information. So there is a transition, like a communication transition piece. I've been building relationships with members of council probably for the last year almost. So I met with a number of them. So it's reconnecting to start to build those relationships as well. Start to read things that I didn't have to read before the campaign. Right? You cannot possibly read the 54 plans and, understand the procedural bylaw. There are things where you say, you know what, this is the job interview. Mm. And when I get the job, then I will launch into the knowing the other parts of the job.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I'm in that phase now, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do I first also clean my house? Because we had lots of volunteers in and out. You've got boxes and brochures left over and all this stuff. I wanted to hang out with my kids a bit and, you know, spend some quality time with the dog.
Yeah.
Right? Because I'll tell you, no matter what happens at the election night or in 4 years or whatever, they're still your family at the end of the day. They're in this boat with you. They, you know, with their blessing, but it wasn't their choice necessarily. So they've been getting some extra TLC the last couple of weeks for sure.
That's nice. It's interesting because, you know, we think of these campaigns, you know, we think about them a lot during them, but we forget that, you know, all the people running, the successful people aren't, you know, that isn't the end of the story for them, that it's, the preamble to the real story, which is actually, you know, doing the jobs that they were trying to get elected to do. So it's tough to think about it, like the awesome, you know, workload to run and then to finish that and then immediately launch into another huge workload. Like, I don't envy you having to read all those plans because I don't think I've read all those plans, but it's...
But I picked it.
You
right?
picked it, yeah.
I chose this, and I have other people on council who are experienced counselors who can help. There's staff who can help. There's lots of people who are interested in providing their perspective. And so everybody has a first day on the job,
mm-hmm.
and mine will be... So December 3rd is the swearing in, and mine will be in December.
That's a great campaign slogan for next time. I chose this.
Please excuse me.
I chose this.
And my husband would have a sign. He says, "Really?"
So,
I'm kidding. I know he's listening. So I'm kidding. Sorry, Mike.
It's all right. There's room for jokes on this show. Is there?
Always.
Okay, good.
That's our mandate.
I was met with stunned silence when I said there's room for jokes on the show, and then...
Oh, we weren't joking. No, it's
okay.
It's good.
Good. It's been almost 4 years. It's... Anyway. So, you know, you laid out a number of priorities that you'd like to take on, so now you have to actually take up the time to, you know, prioritize your priorities. Mm-hmm. So, I was looking at the calendar for January particularly, and there's... I mean, that's going to be a very busy month because you have the regular council meetings. You're going to have the transit service review coming back. Budget starts in January. So, first of all, what are you thinking about moving forward, you know, in terms of your personal priorities as a councillor? And second of all, how are you going to balance that with just, like, the immediate workload, which is going to be tremendous? It's going to be about, you know, 3 months worth of meetings in one go.
Right. So I have a list of vision priorities and then also tactical things that I think we can get done either through, that don't necessarily need to be a council decision, but things that I want to look into.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely in terms of big vision priorities, these aren't set by me. These are set in sometimes there are reasons I ran, like Claremont B.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see an evolution of that plan.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see it on lower on the density side. I want us to talk about the density on Gordon Street, which I believe is problematic. And we need to understand the implications of what we're doing on Gordon Street.
Mm-hmm.
So Claire Maltby is going to be one of those big vision pieces going forward. Clearly the budget, right? Because it's not going to matter what I want to do or what any of the other councillors want to do if there's no budget allocation, right? So that's going to be tough for me coming in because I'm new to that whole process. So I'm going to learn and ask lots of questions and listen to constituents and listen to staff. So the other big chunk, two other big pieces that were part of my platform and that are in the hopper for this term of council is the Transportation Master Plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because with all those people we've been adding to Guelph's Ward 6, you can't add 25,000 people and not provide the road infrastructure for them, right? Mm. You want to put more buses, that's great, but can we cut in for buses? So the Transportation Master Plan has not been looked at for Guelph, I think, since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
It might be 2008 there. I might get the last digit wrong. But we have grown significantly across the city. And it's really important to be looking at transportation as a whole system. And not sort of street by street or in little clusters. So I'm really looking forward to knowing more about that and understanding that. And the Transportation Master Plan also includes transit and trails and active transportation.
Mm-hmm.
So that is definitely in this term of council. The other one's the South End Rec Center.
Mm-hmm.
So Guelph's Ward 6 is 25% of the city's population. There's zero year-round recreation in that ward. It's been promised for more than 20 years. So I want to make sure that is funded in the budget for sure, right? And it's not just for swimming lessons, but it's for seniors who currently are going to Evergreen. It's for people who live in that community to be able to access recreation.
Ward 6 is really 25%?
Yeah, population.
Okay. That should probably be looked at at some point.
I think in this term of council, we need to be looking at ward boundaries.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are the big blocks, and then there's lots of smaller things, granular things we're hearing at the door.
Okay. And I imagine people are already getting in touch with you about their issue. That, you know, I remember that was something when Lloyd Longfield got elected, and he was like the designate MP, and he's already getting emails about people with their problems. And so it's been the same with you, people already saying,
you know what, that's okay. We knocked on people's doors. We said, what do you care about? So it's not like we're going to turn around and say, see you in 4 years.
Well, it's true.
That's what we're there for.
You're just, you know, there's a bit of lag time between you and any actual, like, say you're still Dominique the Citizen, even though you're a councillor elect. But
I am.
You have a little bit more cachet than I do, I guess.
Oh, no. Come on. What? Super glamorous in here.
Yeah.
We try.
The chaise in the corners really helped out. I wanted to talk to you because you're a communications professional by trade. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the talk in this election was the city needs to do a better job sort of talking to people, not just necessarily in terms of like what's bothering them, but in terms of, and this hits your area particularly, you know, when developers come forward to the planning meeting, it's like, we're going to build this 10-story tower on this corner, and the people in the area are shocked. Because they have, this is the first they're hearing of it. If this, you know, is even the first time they've heard about it, then, you know, it could be like weeks later they're reading about it in the Tribune or something. So not to say that you're going to tell people at City Hall how to do their jobs in your first week, but in terms of, you know, your own background and sort of trying to create more awareness in your ward, you know, what's your kind of advice, you know, going forward? How are you going to try and improve those communications as people, you know, are understandably tense about, you know, what might be going up in that vacant lot next to them?
Sure. Okay, so I need to make a distinction, though, between my role as a counselor,
yeah,
which is to set, you know, vision, well, work with the other members of council, set vision, policy, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And my promise to people in Ward 6 was to improve my communications, counselor communications with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will do that by having, you know, regular town hall meetings. Councillor McKinnon and I are going to work on a joint website so you can have a one-stop shop. We're going to keep our respective newsletters just because I have my own style and, you know, it's hard to coordinate with somebody else for that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So just on that, we've just worked on a little article together for Claire Gordon magazine where we open invitation to any parent council, neighborhood association, sport, anybody group that wants to talk to us, we're happy to come talk to them. Because democracy is not just on voting day,
mm-hmm.
but it's about having the information, feeling engaged throughout that whole process, right? Currently there is a, so that is the councillor communications. And of course, I now have a city email, which is dominique.o'rourke@guelph.ca.
And it's full.
it might be after the show. But, so those pieces, whether people want to interact with me directly, whether they want to do it in a town hall or invite Councillor McKinnon or myself, that's the communications piece that I want to improve. So we can flag things for people through those vehicles. So I would not presume as counselor to tell, to provide direction to staff or their DCAO, deputy CAO, how to do things.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is exceedingly difficult now that everyone is connected in with their devices. They can curate their own news. It is very, very difficult to break into that bubble and to say, hey, did you also know?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the city is really trying to engage people with video, with, you know, they've got really fun. Their social media is quite good. So they are just trying to break into this bubble that people are in. And they're in, and not because there's apathy, because the people at the door are smart and they're engaged and they would like to be informed. But people are just busy. They're working. They're taking the kids to scouts or soccer or wherever. So until they see the sign that the building's going up, until physically they see it in their space, it's very difficult to be in front of them. The city's water main department, they do a great job. They got they got the tag on your door, so you know something's coming. So maybe there's a way to expand that. Maybe there's a way to put something in your property tax mailer. I don't know. But having worked in corporate communications, it is very difficult to prioritize what those messages are coming at people. There's lots of consultations at the same time. So I actually think on the whole, they're doing a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
But it is about engaging people. I'll say the other thing, too, is you can push communications as much as you want. The receiver needs to be interested in the message, receptive, and you only care about it when it's timely and it's pertinent and there's something in it for you. So people who say, well, I never go on the city's website, I don't read the Tribune, I don't listen to the, you know, open source, I don't, right? At some point, if you are completely disengaged, you have a responsibility there. If you want to be engaged, you have some responsibility to seek out that information.
Sure.
Sign up for the newsletter, you know, click on the RSS feed, follow the city on Twitter or your counselor, or make a phone call.
Mm.
because that's what we're here for. So I think, as you know, communications is very complicated, getting more complicated as people sort of shut things off. I think we just keep, got to come at people from similar message, from multiple tactics. And influencers, I think, are important.
Mm-hmm.
So let's be talking to neighborhood groups and let's be talking to the people they care about. You know, I love in Malcolm Gladwell's Tipping Point, where they wanted to provide, there was an organization wanted to provide information about breast cancer to black women in the States. And they were trying all these different ways and they realized, wow, they spent a lot of time at the hairdressers and they gave the training to the hairdressers and they provided the information where the women were going to be sitting there for hours, and they actually saw movement in terms of education. So I'm actually really interested in behavioral economics and nudge theory. and on a couple of these things, like what is working in other municipalities or other, you know, countries to nudge behavior in a way that's helpful, right?
Wow. Okay. Nudge theory.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was very wonkish.
Was it wonkish?
Points to ponder.
Points to ponder, what?
Yeah.
That's
wild.
It's cool.
So,
I'm a super
mind
nerd.
Blown. I can see it.
I am a super nerd. Hey!
It was a little blown. So what are you looking forward to and what's happening sort of with getting ready for council right now?
So I love learning new things from a personal perspective. I'm a nerd. Yeah, I am. I love issues management. I love looking at different perspective, looking at an issue from different perspectives and seeing, okay, how can we move this forward? I'm looking forward to meeting my colleagues on council. I have loved meeting the people in Ward 6 who've been great. So I'm keen to learn and to serve. So you guys were talking about Beto O'Rourke earlier. I was hoping I gave
Cousin
him a little
Beto
name recognition.
It,
you know, I was hoping he'd get the I hope he'd get the Guelph bump, but no. And the O'Rourke family crest, the motto is to serve government.
Oh, wow.
Which is cool. I know. Again, mind blown. Cool.
All right. Well, born to be on council, I guess. Anyway, if people want to get in touch with you, if they haven't already, how can they find you out there in the digital universe?
Okay, digital I can do. you know what? I've got now a new cell phone, a new city phone number. I've got a couple emails that are winding down. And so the email at the city is dominique.o'rourke, that's O-R-O-U-R-K-E, at guelph.ca. They can reach me on Facebook at O'Rourke Ward 6. You can find me on Twitter at O'Rourke Ward 6. And actually, at those places, I will put my new phone numbers. So actually, you know what? All my contact information is still on the campaign website, and that is O'RourkeWard6.ca. And that is still up until the end of the month.
All right. Well, there you go. Good places to start. And if you can't find Dominique or O'Rourke online, you clearly need trouble working your internet device. Anyway, thank you so much for coming in and for stopping by. And I hope this was everything you hoped it would be coming in today.
I think you guys do an awesome job.
Thank you.
Covering city council and some issues. And I think you guys are a real asset to the community. So
it's
my pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
Yep.
Oh, you're welcome anytime. My goodness.
Come back next week sincerely.
For 15, yeah.
Well, we can't have her on next week because Carl Wettstein is coming by next week. He is going to do his farewell address. And he's just going to chat about stuff anyway. So Carl Wettstein's in next week. We're going to have Dominique's fellow rookie counselor Rodrigo Galler sometime in December, and we will have more details about that on you can find our website opensourcesguelph.com. You can go on Facebook Open Sources Newswire or find us on Twitter at @OS_Guelph, and you'll be able to hear this episode and past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and the Spotify.
Ooh.
Anyway, I am on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to GuelphPolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com. And I'll have a thing there. And on rankandfile.ca this weekend, probably. So
oh, Rank and File.
I got to keep my...
going. Noted alumnus, yes, of exactly. The Rank and File. So, yeah. Excellent. DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back next week with more open sources Thursdays at 5 p.m. And we will see you then.